Social media and technology have a captivating influence in our world today, and our children often suffer because of it. What can we do to raise healthy and balanced children in the midst of a technology-driven world?
We'll discuss this and more today on Real Family Talk. Join us. Welcome to Real Family Talk. During this episode, we are discussing raising happy, healthy, and balanced children in the world of social media.
We live in a world where technology and social media has become a normal and regular part of life. While there are many good things about social media, there are also many risks and things that children and teens alike should avoid. As parents, it is important to learn how to navigate the cyber world to positively teach our children how to use these resources responsibly. To help us to do just that, we have Mindy Saliers joining us today.
Mindy has been an elementary educator and school counselor for more than 20 years in both the Adventist and public school systems. With a focus on social-emotional learning, Mindy provides individual, small group, and whole school guidance for preschool through high school age students. Since 2013, Mindy has served as a bullying prevention trainer for La Sierra University Center for Conflict Resolution. She has trained nearly 150 schools and community youth organizations across North America. She currently lives with her husband and two young daughters and works as an educational consultant. Mindy, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thanks so much, Willie and Elaine, for having me. I'm so glad to be back.
So happy to have you back. So, Mindy, you've worked with children for a very long time. You've seen the way social media and technology has changed and led to changes in the lives of adults, but especially in the lives of children. In your experience and research, what impact does social media and general media use have on children and teens?
Yeah, such a great question. I love that we have data now to show us that on average, children between the ages of 8 and 12 in the U.S. spend between 4 to 6 hours a day watching or using screens, and teens can use almost up to 9 hours a day. Isn't that mind-blowing?
That's crazy.
So even though we know that screens can entertain and teach our kids and keep them occupied, we also know that there's a lot of problems associated with that usage. So research studies show us that screen time viewed by a child increases their chances for obesity. It increases irregular sleeping patterns, and the more screens viewed, the more they have poor self-image, poor body image issues. And then in addition to that, we see that it diminishes their attention spans so that they become more dependent on flashy digital learning media and distractions. They're also showing more anxiety and more stress when they're deprived of on-demand entertainment. And then we also see with increased amounts of screen time, children are at a higher risk for eye strain, for eye pain, for headaches, for digital eye strain, and for worsening myopia and nearsightedness.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
That's a mouthful.
And I really hope that we can get this information disseminated to parents because, you know, we're seeing children as young as 3 months, 6 months being plopped in front of a screen. And again, we're not here to vilify or make it seem like screens are the worst things, but just what you've shared, how detrimental overuse of media and social media can be to children is quite alarming.
And of course, today, children are suffering from mental health illnesses at alarming rates. They're experiencing anxiety disorders, mood disorders, and even depression at very early ages. Does social media have any impact here? What does research show social networking sites and general media usage have on a child's mental health, Mindy?
Yeah, thanks, Willie. So here's what we know, that excessive social networking and media usage of 2 hours or more a day is directly linked to depression symptoms in kids. Moreover, we see that children and teens with excessive screen time show an inability to form friendships, to maintain relationships. These kids are less likely to be able to have healthy play engagement with other children. They're weaker at solving problems with other kids, and they have a deficiency in social ability. We also see, too, that screen time, the more screen usage, the more increase in behavior issues like anxiety, low self-esteem, and particularly, and there's so much data on this, TV viewing of violence is directly correlated to violent behavior in children. So bottom line is excessive media usage impacts students' and children's mental capacity. We see students with too much screen time having lower grades in school. They read fewer books. They spend less time doing other fun things, other relaxing things. And then they lack that physical exercise and that outdoor experience. One more thing, and we particularly see this with kids in terms of social media. They experience a higher level of what kids call FOMO, which is fear of missing out, because they're seeing all of these, you know, pictures and travels and experiences in their feed on their social media. And so they think, well, my life isn't as good, or, you know, they're less satisfied and content.
Yeah, you know, this is just, it's shocking every time I hear it. You know, we've been dealing with this information for quite some time now, and it seems to be getting worse. And you made a really interesting point where you said that more than 2 hours, that's where we're seeing the significant difference and changes in children's behavior. And yet, remind me what you said about how many hours. I seem to remember teens are watching up to 9 hours a day.
Isn't that crazy? And so in no way, and I'm a parent too, right? In no way am I saying no screen time at all or no media uses whatsoever, right? We want to do everything with balance. But in 9 hours a day, we want to be very cautious as parents and caregivers that we're not using screen time as a babysitter and we're just plopping our child or our teen in front of a screen without some regulation.
Yeah. So what would you say to parents of teens? And later on, we're going to talk about children. But it has to be pretty difficult for parents of teens. And I'm so glad that we didn't have these things when our kids were teens. you know, it was the beginning when our children were teenagers. It was the beginning
MySpace,
right? Yeah. And we could actually control. We had one computer in the home for them to use, where now every child has their own iPad, has their own computer, has their own cell phone. So how can parents of teens specifically monitor this? Because obviously 9 hours, that means while you're in school, when you should be sleeping, maybe during dinner time, how is a parent supposed to monitor this?
Right. I grew up with one computer in my household too, right? And we could at most send email and play solitaire. So, it is a whole new world of parenting and really one that I'm having to step through as a newbie and a learner as well. I love the principle that kids don't get their screens in their bedroom. I think it's a lot easier to regulate and honestly see what they're using their screen for if it's used in the main room, right? And so That's one rule that as our kids get older, we look to put into place.
So you're saying that even in today's world, because that was our rule with our kids, that the computer stayed in the family room where I could see from the kitchen or from the living room, you know, it was in a place where as parents we could see what was happening. And we do know that monitoring our children is healthy, right? So this is still a good rule.
Yeah, every household is going to be different in your comfort level, but I think if the devices are kept in the main areas of the room, and then there's also designated times when you're allowing them to be on screen so that it's monitored, so that it's regulated, rather than just sort of a free pass, right? A little bit later, we're going to talk about how to manage the time and how to teach kids to manage their own time, and then strategies to use around using devices, especially around bedtimes and things that should be kept sacred, so that, and especially with teens, right? The teens aren't on the screen late into the night and it's like eating into their sleep time.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it's time for us to take a break, Mindy. But when we return, we'll continue talking with you about social media and its impact on our children. Stay with us.
Today on Real Family Talk, we're talking about the impact of general media usage on the health of children and how we, as parents or caregivers, can help them safely navigate technology. We're talking with expert Mindy Saliers, who has worked with children for over 18 years and seen the effects firsthand. Mindy, thank you again for being with us.
Happy to, Willie.
So, Mindy, before the break, we talked about the effect of media usage on the health and mental health of teens and younger children. So let's talk a little bit now about the impact on their social skills, and you covered that a little bit, and relationship abilities. What does the data show us?
Absolutely. So as a school counselor and a parent, I really worry about children watching inappropriate content for fear that they're going to be exposed to violence, to risk-taking behaviors, to video stunts that inspire them to do unsafe things, to sexual content, to negative stereotypes, to substance use and abuse, and especially with social media, to cyberbullying and to those predators out there. I also worry about the result of too much screen time on kids, especially when they're given screens almost as a babysitter to prevent boredom. And here's what happens. They tune out their surroundings and then they fail to make everyday observations and connections that are really important for their development. Mm-hmm. So children then become unable to entertain themselves creatively, and they're unable to be out-of-the-box thinkers. We also see that children and teens with excessive screen time haven't learned to self-regulate or manage their emotions. So we're seeing this in research a lot, that teens can't tap into their feelings. They can't develop strategies and coping skills. Another thing that excessive screen time is showing us is that it causes dependency on screens, when what really we want them to learn to do is what God designed them to do and to want, which is relationships. So here they are, and they're trying their hardest to maintain these cyber relationships because they lack that face-to-face communication. They're also lacking basic communication skills like phone calls and how to have regular engagement with people in person. They lack abilities to manage conflict. They really need those iron sharpening iron skills to build depth in relationships that God created them to have. So the result of this is a really immature generation. Exactly.
I was just about to say that. So we've basically created a generation of underdeveloped people, hence why we keep hearing this word today, I'm afraid to adult, or I'm adulting, you know, it's difficult. We're unprepared for adult life, we're hearing more and more.
Actually, what it sounds like is that, you know, they're underdeveloped. And instead of growing and maturing as a natural process, they're being stunted. And stunted in their physical development, emotional development, perhaps even spiritual development because of lack of time with God, because they're spending so much time with screens that they need to be overstimulated just to exist.
Absolutely. And really what that ends up leading to is this parenting philosophy that we hear all about. You know, it used to be helicopter parenting. Now they're being called lawnmower parenting, which are parents that literally go ahead of their kid and mow the way, pave the way out in the real world, whether
wow.
it's you know, that first job interview or, you know, establishing their own household. So we see it really being a domino effect from screen usage stunting growth to then parents going out and paving the way. So they continue to be then immature young adults and immature adults down the road.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about what the AMA, the American Medical Association, is saying about all of this.
Yeah, so because of that, right, because that they're stunted in growth, we see that the American Medical Association increased the age of adolescence to age 27.
That's scary.
That's
oh,
very
my
scary.
Goodness.
So what's happening?
It's supposed to end at 18.
I know that's what, you know, we traditionally think, but, you know, their maturity, and we already know that male brains aren't developed until age 27 or 28. And it's their choosing part of the brain, the brain that makes choices. So they're really emotionally stunted, and in some cases can be even cognitively stunted because they've been exposed to screens too long. So what's happening is that our kids aren't learning in this world. Even though our children live in a performance-driven world, they can't deliver because they lack that relationship ability.
So what I'm hearing you say, Mindy, is that they really are not able to make those decisions earlier. You're saying that men's brains are not fully developed until age 27, which means then they shouldn't get married before age 27. It means they probably shouldn't drive before age 27. They probably shouldn't be in the army before age 27 if they need that prefrontal cortex of the brain where the executive function takes place.
Absolutely. In fact, as a mom of daughters, I tell my girls, you know, males' brains mature later, and really that should mean that you think about marriage later, right? You're not jumping into marriage at 22 when you get out of college. You're waiting to ensure that the guy you're going to marry is making the choices as an adult and not still as an adolescent.
Yeah, and I want to be fair to the guys as well. So when we talk about the male brain maturing later, and it's always been that way throughout history, right? When we look at the research that men, boys develop later, slower than women. So at what age are women's brains reaching that level of that
maturity.
Place of maturity and judgment?
Yeah, we know that a female brain is fully developed around 24 or 25. So even then, I don't want my daughters jumping into marriage right after college. I really want them to be thinking long and hard and waiting until they're fully developed.
Go on to grad school and do something else more creative.
So absolutely. That,
you have more experience, you have more tools of judgment, of making decisions, and you're able to live in a world in a better way.
Absolutely. And so, you know, going back to how that connects to media, then if we already know that our children's brains develop that late in life, we absolutely don't want to stunt that growth even further and possibly have them never developing these skills and choice factors that they eventually reach in their late 20s.
Well, Mindy, this information is just incredibly sobering and just helpful for our families. And it sounds like we need to begin to have different conversations with our children and with our teens about relationships, about social media and media in general. So we're going to talk more with you. We're going to get some helpful hints from you after a short break. And Mindy will be sharing some practical ways we can help our children navigate social media responsibly. Stay with us. We're back on Real Family Talk with educational consultant Mindy Salyers. We're discussing how to raise healthy and balanced kids in today's technology-driven world.
Mindy, thanks again for being with us. You've shared so much about your research and what we can learn from it. Unquestionably, media usage is having a damaging effect on our youth. It's clear that, as parents, we have to take action to help our children. What are some good rules of thumb to have in regards to social media and general media use?
Well, thanks, Willie. My favorite rule of thumb is Philippians 4:8. And we know that, right? Whatsoever is pure and kind and good, think on these things. And so I think when we're establishing any kind of family process, we want to make sure that it's biblically driven. And that's the one, especially when it comes to media consumption, that I like to hold to. But the American Academy for Child and Adolescent Psychiatry also gives us some good rules of thumb. And here's what they are. So when your child is 0 to 18 months, we want to make sure that we're limiting screen usage only to video chatting alongside their grown-up, right? So for example, if daddy goes out of town or grandma lives far away, right? Those are the times when video usage and screen usage is appropriate. I've been the guilty parent as well of wanting to have a restaurant conversation and handing my kid the phone, but as much as possible, limit it only to that screen time.
So can I ask you a quick question on that?
Sure.
So for viewers who need to know this, because now we have all these great educational programs for, for ages 0 to 18 months on video. How about those programs?
Yeah, I can distinctly remember coming home with my 6-month-old sitting with the babysitter and watching Sesame Street and losing my mind because we hadn't really given any kind of permission for any screen usage. So even though marketing media tells us that, it's educational, it's for kids 0 to 18 months. We really want to steer away from that because their brain is developing and they need to be doing all of those things God intended their brain to be doing, the feeling and the touching and the listening and the sights and all of those things. And if we expose them to screens too early on, then we're risking their brains kind of becoming addicted to that fast-paced, quick action movement on the screen. So a big cautionary, I would say, up until 18 months.
I agree. Okay, tell us about 18 to 24 months.
Yeah. So in this range, which is a year and a half to, two and a half years old, we want to make sure that we're limiting it only to educational programming with their grown-up, right?
Emphasis with the caregiver.
Yeah, that's big deal, right? Because the caregiver then, I think it's twofold. The caregiver is there, and so they're experiencing snuggling on the couch with mommy, but they're also experiencing mommy singing along with the songs, or helping them count to three or four on their fingers. So there's actual instruction that's happening if the grown-up is there beside them.
Excellent. All right. Well, let's go on to age 2 to 5. We only have a few minutes left, so we can go through pretty quickly.
Sure. So if your kid is 2 to 5, we want to make sure that we're limiting screens to about an hour a day or 3 hours on weekend days. If your kid is 6 or older, we want to encourage them to have healthy habits. And I'll give you some brainstorms about how to do that, because really learning about how to use media, teaching your kid about it, and then us using parental controls is so important. So here are some things that I've seen families do. I've seen them only allow screen times on weekends and on summer breaks. My family personally only does co-viewing. In other words, we sit with our kids and choose what we're going to watch. And that way we're able to dialogue with our kids what the content is, and we keep that open communication around media. I also suggest limiting device accessibility. So like intentionally saying we don't use screens in the car unless on long road trips, or we're going to have a screen-free zone during mealtime. So we're enforcing those screen parameters around those precious times. And then also no screen times around bedtime. We want to make sure that kids aren't exposed to that image at least an hour before bed. And then they're always charging either their iPads or their phones or whatever outside of their room, so they're not tempted to use it.
Right.
So by reducing that screen usage, we're really teaching them positive habits that will carry on into adulthood.
That's amazing. Mindy, this information has been invaluable. Thank you so much for being with us today. You know we have to have you back. We need a part two for this, so be prepared for us to call you back.
Thank you so much for having me, and I so appreciate your ministry and how you're guiding parents like me.
Thank you again, Mindy. You know, in 3 John 1 and 2, the Bible says, "Beloved, I pray that all may go well with you and that you may be good in health as it goes well with your soul." May God be with you as you endeavor to raise balanced and healthy children in today's ever-changing world.
Thank you for watching Real Family Talk. Join us again when we'll share more about strengthening families and inspiring hope. See you next time.